Thanks, everyone, very much for coming this morning. My name is Josh Gamble. I'm a postdoc at the Soil and Water Management Research Unit in St. Paul, working with Drs. Gary Feiereisen and John Baker. I'm going to talk a little bit today about some of our work on a working dairy farm trying to quantify management-induced changes in soil carbon stocks at the field scale. Before I do that, though, I should acknowledge my other co-authors, in addition to Gary and John, who worked closely with Sharon Papiernik on this, and our technician, Chris Wente, who was instrumental in getting all the sampling done. I'm going to just jump right into my objectives here. I have a lot of things I want to cover this morning. So, again, this study is something in which we're partnering with a dairy producer in West Central Minnesota. And really the idea is that, you know, they've got this system out there. We've got large herd numbers. They produce most of their forage on farm. Most of the manure goes back out into the field. And so we've established this partnership with them, monitoring a variety of things related to water quality, soil health, productivity. And this is just one aspect of that, where we're interested in whether these sort of highly intensive dairy systems that are the forage production systems are irrigated, they're tile drained, relatively, at least we think, tightly coupled carbon cycles, whether these practices can indeed sequester or at least maintain soil carbon stocks. And then the other piece of this is really just thinking about the cost of doing that and looking at ways where we can potentially in the future reduce our sampling expenditures. So looking at ways to, you know, in this case, interpolate soil carbon data in a way that might allow us to reduce our sampling intensity in the future, but still monitor those changes effectively. So, as I mentioned, the farm is located in West Central Minnesota, and our farmer cooperator was generous enough to allow us access to these two fields, which we creatively dubbed the West Field and the East Field. They're immediately adjacent to each other, which is also convenient. We started work out there in 2006, so that fall we began soil sampling, and these dots denote the sampling location, so you can see we've got an evenly spaced grid sampling design, 49 sample locations in each field. They're roughly 113 meters, both within and between sampling points, and samples were collected each fall from up until 2015. In 2009, the producer installed center pivot irrigation. So from that point on, we've got 12 rain-fed sampling points, with the remainder, of course, being irrigated sampling points in each field. In terms of management, in our east field, it was relatively simple. We were in silage corn the whole time. Manure was injected the first 3 years of the study. With the rates in terms of carbon application and manure, you can see just below. 2009, no manure was applied, and then from there on out, it was fertigated through the center pivot. So the manure, the dairy slurry was screened for solids and applied through the irrigation system. And you can see then irrigated from 2009 onward. In the west field, things varied a bit. We started again in silage corn. There was a winter rye cover crop planted from 07 to 08, terminated in spring of 08. Back in the silage corn for 4 years, and then the final 3 years of the study, the producer planted alfalfa in that field. Manure was injected up until 2012 at that site, and then no manure applied in 2013, and then in a rather unique management scenario, he applied manure to the alfalfa the final 2 years with an airway subsurface slurry deposition applicator, and again irrigated from 2009 to 2012. So some of you may know about regression kriging, but basically it's a hybridized geostatistical approach that combines ordinary kriging with spatially explicit auxiliary information. And so the regression, first the target variable is predicted with the regression, and then the residuals from the regression are interpolated, and then the final estimation of the target variable is basically the sum of the regression and the interpolated residual values. And one of the things to note, you know, as we look through the literature, often the regression kriging studies are for, you know, it's like a single year, and usually only topsoil down 0 to 15, perhaps down to 30 centimeters depth. So one of the things we are interested in doing is looking at changes over time with regression kriging, and then looking at how well it performed in terms of interpolating various depths. And so some of these auxiliary variables that we used in the study, we had a 1 meter resolution LiDAR DEM from which we calculated the topographic wetness index with a D-infinity flow algorithm. We used Sergel soil type map. We also calculated a distance to the nearest tile line. So this subsurface drainage map we received from the producer, we were able to calculate the distance to the nearest drainage line, hypothesizing, of course, that that's going to impact soil moisture and carbon dynamics. And then classified each sample location as to whether it was irrigated, yes or no. What happened there? Whether it was in the west field or the east field, and then just the latitude and longitude. And you can see what that full regression model looked like on the right-hand side there. This is what our auxiliary variable rasters looked like. So our elevation ranged by about 6 meters across the whole site, which isn't a whole lot, but as you can see below in the topographic wetness index, it actually corresponds to some relatively wet areas out in these fields. This is a prairie pothole landscape, which is dotted throughout with these lower wet areas, some of which retained water, some of which have been filled in over the years, but in any case, it's sort of indicative of the sort of land use history or the inherent history of the land and how that's going to impact carbon dynamics. You can see in the upper right, the site was extensively tile drained, some of which was added during the study period, much to our dismay, but you know, that's the nature of on-farm work. And then down in the bottom right, again, Sergo soil type, we had 13 soil types across the study site, most of which were silty clays or clay loams. I'm going to jump right into the results. So starting first with just the top two increments, 0 to 15, 15 to 30 centimeters. And I know there's a lot of information there, so we'll just guide through. We had significant effects of elevation for all for both increments, both years within each increment. Also significant effects of topographic wetness index. And field was significant for all but 2006 in the 15 to 30 centimeter increment. And then starting in 2015, we see this effect of irrigation emerge for both depths. We had relatively good, I said pretty good spatial structure in the 0 to 15 centimeter increment, as indicated by relatively low nugget to sill ratios ranging up to 0.28. This provided excellent predictive ability. So you can see the results of a leave one out cross validation on the right. And you can see we had a pretty high R squared, so the regression kriging accounted for roughly 90% of the variation associated with the carbon stocks in this layer. And this is what the first surface, response surface, looks like for 2006. And you see, so first of all, the darker colors indicate lower carbon stock values, lighter indicate higher. We see this distinct difference between the two fields to the tune of almost 13 megagrams per hectare higher in the east field than the west. And you can, again, see these outlines of these wetter areas where the kriging is predicting higher carbon values in general. By 2015, we start to see some changes in terms of the field scale means, but you can also start to see the effects of irrigation emerge. And I'll talk a bit more about that in a minute. For the second soil layer, again, we had really good spatial structure for our 2006 data. For 2015, it was a different story. Basically, there was relatively no spatial structure to that data. And so that corresponded to excellent predictive ability in 2006 and I would say moderate in 2015. And if you look at the cross-validation figures, that's shown there. So when we looked across all of our kriged layers, you know, the regressions accounted for anywhere between like 47 and 50% of the total variation in carbon stocks. And so if you look at the 2015 figure there, R squared of about 0.51, basically the spatial information or lack thereof added, you know, little to the predictive ability, whereas in our other layers, we went from about 0.5 up to, you know, 0.89, 0.95 in terms of predictive ability. I'll just jump through this a little quicker. Just got my 5-minute warning. Again, there was no significant field effect in 2006. We had an average carbon stock of 52 megagrams in this layer, 2006. In 2015, again, we see this higher carbon stock in the eastern field, and again, effects of irrigation down to 30 centimeters. We also had a significant effect, and so there are the totals. So this was averaged across fields then. So the irrigation, on average across field, we had higher carbon stocks there than in the rain-fed areas. If we take both of those rasters, the rasters for each year by layer, and do a little raster math, we get this figure where we see the change in organic carbon stocks over the study period. So the west field, we saw a gain of 4.5 megagrams per hectare, mostly due to gains in the irrigated portions of the field. In the east field, we're roughly holding steady, though it looks like we're losing carbon in the rain-fed areas. At 15 to 30 centimeters, in both fields, it really looks like we're holding steady in terms of carbon. We're maintaining. But there was this change associated, this difference between the irrigated and rain-fed areas in 2015, which appears to be a decline in the rain-fed areas. In terms of the lower increments, the auxiliary variables had poor predictive ability for those layers. There's very little spatial structure, if any, so no regression kriging was conducted in those layers. But if you look over the simple means at the right, you can see that just straight averages, those layers appear to be gaining carbon as well. And so just to sum this up a bit, we found that the regression kriging was pretty highly accurate for most of our top 30 centimeters of soil in this agroecosystem, with the exception of the 15 to 30 centimeter layer in 2015. And this, the spatial distribution of carbon corresponded closely with our elevation and our wetness index, as well as our field and irrigation borders at this site. And so for these deeper soil increments, we had this lack of spatial structure and relationships between the carbon stocks and the auxiliary variables. So this method isn't really going to work in terms of, being able to reduce our sampling costs long-term and monitoring stocks in those lower at those lower depths. Again, we're gaining some carbon in the west field, largely due to gains in the irrigated portions of the field. And in the east field, things seem to be holding relatively stable, though we might be seeing some declines in the rain-fed areas. And, getting back to one of our initial objectives, then, it's just showing that some of the practices that are being used on these types of dairy farms in west central Minnesota can be sustainable in terms of organic matter, at least. So with that, I'll end, and I don't know if I've got time for questions.
We have time for one question or two questions. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's really impressive, though, to see the pivots showing up over time.
Right.
With the kriging of 7x7, I never done regression kriging. Isn't that the difference between seeing that it's amazing?
Yeah, I mean, well, it may be a little more pronounced than it really is. I mean, so essentially what we're doing is fitting a separate regression coefficient then. When that, we get the statistical difference between irrigated versus rain-fed areas, then there's a separate coefficient. So it does create this pronounced line in the visual that may or may not be that, real in the field. It's probably more of a gradient, especially with the irrigation. It's not like your center pivot, it creates this hard line. I mean, it's going to depend on wind conditions and things, so... Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of an artifact of the method, I think, but, I mean, yeah, good point.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, our next...